Hello, listeners of Accents on WUKY. This is Katerina Stoikova, your host, and my guest today is veteran radio personality Tom Martin of Eastern Standard and Undermain, among other things. Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I'm very good. How are you doing, Katerina?
I'm doing great. We have so much to talk about, and I don't even know where to start, and I'm very afraid of asking a stupid question.
No such thing.
Yet I know that one important rule in interviewing is that you cannot be trying to impress your guest, but you're a legend. 55 years in the business.
Well, that's true, but we'll leave the legendary status to whatever people think after I'm done. But I appreciate that. I'm very flattered by it, especially coming from you.
When did you first fall in love with radio?
Oh, well, that was in Moorhead. I was going to Moorhead State University. I was majoring in pre-veterinary medicine. I wanted to be a vet. But at about that time, Moorhead began its broadcast communications program. And I'd always been really interested in radio. I was grew up listening to 50,000-watt radio stations out of Chicago and Nashville and Fort Wayne, WLS, WOWO in Fort Wayne, and WLAC in Gallatin, Tennessee, outside of Nashville, and just was always fascinated by it. So when this opportunity came along, and I was finding pre-vet medicine a little bit challenging, I made the switch. Along the way, counselor I had in the program suggested that that it was very much in its infancy, and I probably was going to learn more about broadcasting if I just went into the business, into commercial radio. So while I was on the air at WMKY in Moorhead, at Moorhead State, I also went to work at WMOR in town. And from there, I got an offer to join the news department at WISE in Asheville. And that was my first opportunity to dip a toe in the waters of news. And there was a veteran news director there who had been in the business for years and years and years. And he was a terrific mentor. And just kind of threw me into the water, covering city council and the police beat and all those things. Which I had never done before. And the more I got into it, the more interesting and exciting it became. And one thing led to another, and I went on to work at WROV in Roanoke, Virginia, then WORD in Spartanburg, South Carolina, another hair-raising experience in my radio journey. And in part, that's because of an encounter with the Ku Klux Klan. I went from there to Pittsburgh and KQV, which was an ABC-owned radio station. And there's kind of the beginning of a story that picks up again 25 years later at KQV. And I'll just interject here that it involves working at the time with a disc jockey at KQV who was going by the name of Jeff Christie, and he was fired. He had a penchant for talking politics, and it was a music station, and the general manager had warned him and warned him and warned him, and he kept it up, so he was fired. And I didn't hear from Jeff Christie for another 25 years, and I'll tell you about that later in this thread. In 74, the news director of another ABC station was hired to begin a new radio network for the Associated Press in Washington. And so he basically farmed the other ABC stations for staff, and I was one of them. And we were moved to D.C., arriving on the night that Nixon resigned. And so the town was pretty much electrified and kind of a circus atmosphere. And
a lot to talk about on the radio, I guess.
Yeah, a lot. And then from AP Radio, I was at AP Radio for 10 years doing the morning drive news. Went from there to RKO Radio News in New York. And from RKO, after it was bought out by Dick Clark and moved out of the city, went to work for ABC News as part of a network they created to cover the Gulf War. And also was Paul Harvey's vacation substitute. And eventually that whole thing that former Governor Chandler used to say about us Kentuckians eventually coming home happened, and I came back here and haven't looked back. Really enjoy being in Kentucky.
This is not our first conversation during which I'm on that side of the mic. And years ago, you said something that I remember and I repeat to many people, and you said that by moving back to Lexington, you've added 10 years to your life.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really true. We were having a conversation about this at home the other day because I have family that has moved here from the New York area, and others who are coming, apparently. And we all agreed that the pace, the day-to-day grind and pace of life is, you get a good 7 to 10 years run of it, and then it begins to really wear you down, especially if you're commuting from outside of Manhattan. I lived in both Manhattan, and then for most of the time I was there out in New Jersey. And it's just a very wearing experience. Exciting. It's really a city for 30 and 40 somethings, I'd say, people with that energy level. But eventually, I came back here for a high school reunion, and I noticed that everybody just seemed so chill and younger. And I thought, oh.
I want some of that.
Yeah, I want some of that. So it wasn't too long after that that I decided to come back.
Well, we're very happy to have you.
Thank you.
Well, you're the host of Eastern Standard on WEKU. It is a radio magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Say more.
Well, when I inherited the show, John Hingsbergen, who created it, had passed away. And I went to the station to do the first couple of shows and discovered quickly that it was a call-in program with really no filtering, no delay. And I had just come from WABC in New York, which was a talk radio station where that 25-year later story unfolded that we can get to later. And they had banks of call screeners and delays, and for good reason. And sure enough, the first couple of times I did Eastern Standard, it was basically hijacked by one person who would call in and filibuster. And, you know, you had a choice of either just being rude and telling them to get off the phone or bear with them. And it was really, you know, that chill that I was looking for in coming back to Kentucky was quickly dispelled. And so I went to the management of WEKU at the time, it was Roger Duvall, and said, look, this is just too difficult for me. This is not where I want to be in my life. But if you would consider a different approach, I'd be up for it. And that would be to produce the program on an NPR level, using NPR production standards and quality. And so at that point, that's when we partnered with Neil Kesterson at Dynamics Productions here in Lexington. I had known Neil for years as one of the finest sound designers and technical directors, engineers I'd ever worked with, including in New York. And he completely got what it was that I wanted to do. And not only did he get it, he has enhanced it enormously, and it turns out to be a really good editor. He will stop me if he hears something that, when I'm kind of falling into an outer tone, that kind of thing, it's like, no, Tom, just carry on a conversation with people. And I have to remember that because I was an announcer for so many years. Neil's good at that. And so He's very good at figuring out what kind of music to use as buffers or interstitials, if you will, to go from segment to segment. And so basically what we have is a program of 3-4 interview segments, usually one-on-one, sometimes two guests. Occasionally we'll do a produced segment that involves many voices that we've gathered in a variety of interviews. Sometimes an interview will go on for a length of time because it was so interesting that I don't want to cut it down. So we may be reduced to a couple of interviews. One of those would be a recent interview I did with Janice Ian that I thought was going to run about 12 or 13 minutes, which is pretty long in radio. This went for 23 minutes, and there's not a dull moment. I mean, she is fascinating. And it was all about her contribution of her entire personal archive to Berea College and why. And the why is really interesting when you hear that. We're also doing a series called Democracy Optimists, which is just two segments, two interviews, one in the first half, one in the second half, each about 23 minutes long. And that's because these are on complicated issues involved with the elections that are coming upon us and for the long run. But by and large, what I aim for is a magazine approach, a variety of topics, and somehow connected to hopefully Central Kentucky, but certainly Kentucky, and Eastern Kentucky in particular. We are Eastern Kentucky University, and we have 9 transmitters strategically located around the mountain region because mountains are unfriendly to FM signals. So we have a transmitter in each of those locations that we send our radio signal to make sure that we can get out into those areas. And now we're about to turn one on in Maysville, so we'll be up in northeastern Kentucky as well. And that determines what we talk about.
Well, how do you keep updated on everything that's going on?
I have long been, ever since arriving in Washington and then more so in New York, always read in the morning. I'm a believer in that. And that means that I have a collection of publications that I keep up with, a pretty wide variety that I keep up with through a couple of websites that provide menus of the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, the Atlantic, Oxford American, of course, the Herald Leader and the Courier Journal, the Mountain Eagle. I'm a big fan of the Mountain Eagle and Sam Adams. And I try to read everything I can every day, and from those national newspapers are covering big, major stories that affect the world and affect the nation, but ultimately they affect us in some way. And so what I like to do is figure that out. How is this issue important to us here? And who can talk about it intelligently and in a compelling way? But besides that, over the years, I've been doing this for about 6.5 years now and have developed a pretty good network of sources here that know to contact me when they have something that they think would be of interest, and we always pursue those.
As I said earlier, you've been in the radio biz for 55 years. How has radio programming evolved?
I'm happy to be in public radio and an NPR affiliate because it has not evolved as much as commercial has. I can go into a little bit of history here if you want to do that. What happened, actually, in my view, and this involves, again, that 25-year story, so I guess now I can tell it. That individual who was fired from KQV kind of disappeared for quite a while.
The political one.
Mm-hmm. He went back home to Cape Girardeau. He went to work as a salesman for the Kansas City Royals. One of the program, there was an assistant program director in Pittsburgh at KQV who was kind of a friend and a fan of Jeff Christie, I'm saying with air quotes. And he had gotten a job as a program director at a station in Sacramento, California. Roger Ailes, the founder of Fox News, who went on to be the founder of Fox News, was there at the time and working on a concept called talk radio. At the time, most of us had never heard of that, but the concept was to talk politics, open up the phone lines, get people riled up, drive up the ratings, become more valuable to advertisers. And so Jeff Christie was the program director that was his friend said, I've got just the guy for you. He's really creative and he's really good radio. And this individual was a good radio producer and performer. They brought him out there. They trained him. And then they leased a studio from WABC in New York to position him in New York, close to Madison Avenue. They managed to build a network of about 600 very small radio stations, mostly AM, all over the country to begin this programming. And the first day I was on the job at WABC, we were still typing with Selectric typewriters, and I'm sitting there banging out news for the afternoon on a Selectric, and this person walks into the newsroom and he's got on a suit and his hair is short and bore no resemblance to this person I had known. And he spins around and he looks at me and he says, Tom, is that you? And I'm like, yeah. He says, don't you know who I am? I'm like, yeah, I know who you are. And he said, no, you knew me as Jeff Christie, but his name was Rush Limbaugh.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And for 5 years, while I was at WABC, in the afternoons, I did afternoon drive news on the station. I wasn't affiliated with any of those programs. But Rush did his show about 20 feet from where I sat. So I witnessed a lot of what went on in there. And in my view, that and then the signing of the 1997 Telecommunications Act by President Clinton changed radio forever. The Telecommunications Act dropped the limit on the number of stations one company or one individual could own from 7 to sky's the limit. So overnight arose the creation of Clear Channel Radio. And that one entity owned 800 radio stations around the country. So what they began doing was downsizing at stations and centralizing the programming in major markets and then satelliting it or however distributing it to the stations that they had bought up and decimated their staffs.
In other words, making propaganda easier.
Making it much easier. And at the same time, creating a very dangerous situation in that the example that was given in testimony before Congress about how dangerous this could be was about a station in Minot, South Dakota, where this had happened. There had been a news department there. There had been a small staff that could be on call if the sheriff or the police department needed them to get information out to the community. A train had derailed, and as a result, a couple of chemical cars carrying chlorine gas split open, and this gas cloud was wafting over the community. So the police chief called the station desperately, frantically, help us, we need to get the word out, we need to evacuate people. No answer.
Wow.
They were automated. And as a result, there were quite a few injuries that could have been prevented. And that's happened all over the country. And one thing I will say for WEKU is that we have a pretty good size staff on our news department so that we can respond to things like the I-75 shooter or what has just happened in Whitesburg and Letcher County, which is still unfolding, where staff of one person or none is not going to be able to do that.
And how important is the radio voice?
It used to be really important. When I got into it, that was a big thing. And in fact, I was told to take voice and articulation when I was at Morehead State. I had a very strong Eastern Kentucky accent because I grew up there. That was my home. And at that time, the effort was to rid us of our accent. I look back on that now and regret it because I think the Eastern Kentucky accent is rich, culturally rich, and carries an awful lot of nuance that got lost in that effort. And I think we're trying to recover it now. For me, I've been using this voice, you know, all my life, so I've just kind of gotten away from it, although I guess I have a bit of a Midwestern accent. But it also used to be important to have a deep voice, a deep male voice, frankly, back in the day. And we're way beyond that now. I think people listening to the radio or to a podcast just want to hear a human being. And as long as they can articulate and enunciate so that you can understand what they're saying, that's all that matters.
So what is Undermain?
Undermain is a labor of love, for sure. It began around 2013, 2014, I partnered with Art Sheckett and Christine Huskisson to create a digital arts magazine to fill what we considered a void in Lexington communication about the arts. It's been 10 years of growth, of learning from mistakes, learning from successes, building networks, building some name recognition. About a year and a half ago, my partners Christine and Art both reached a point where they needed to pursue other things in life and decided to step away. We had just gone through rebuilding the website, and we had won a very large grant from the Great Meadows Foundation in Louisville that stipulated that we expand our coverage footprint to the Midwest. So with that grant, we were putting writers on the road, paying expenses to go to Nashville, to St. Louis, to Columbus, Cincinnati. And it was exhausting to manage all of that, to intake the copy, to edit, and so forth. In the middle of it all, the flood in Eastern Kentucky occurred. I wound up doing 6 weekly, hour-long documentaries in a row on that flood, a series called Rise, and that interrupted my work with Undermain and shifted a lot of the burden onto Christine and Art. So eventually they, to put it frankly, they burned out and other things intervened in their life. So it went dark for a while. We've met about 5 months ago over the question, what now? What do we do with this? We have a 501c3. We still have the website. Do we close it down or what? And I suggested that they turn it over to me. I had talked with my wife, Sheila Kenny, about this. Sheila had been the marketing director for the Lexington Center, or Central Bank Center now. So Rupp Arena, the Opera House, the Convention Center, all those fell under her umbrella for 21 years. So she has pretty strong chops in the marketing area, especially marketing of the arts and performance. My sister-in-law, Katie Conway, had just relocated here from New Jersey. Her pedigree includes being Martha Stewart's very first marketing director and putting her on the map, pretty much, and then going on to work for Condé Nast and other magazine companies as an editor and in marketing both. And so she has come on as our editor. She's a very meticulous, sensitive editor. Sheila's in the role of managing editor, so she's helping on the business side. and I'm basically the publisher slash producer. The three of us are working on a volunteer basis. So we're each putting in about 6 to 10 hours a week on Undermain. We have hired a digital communications, a digital media specialist, Laura Daly, who also does a series on reproductive issues on Eastern Standard. And she has really boosted our readership. We're seeing sign-ups to our newsletter, for example, on the average of 3 to 5 a day, and that's pretty consistent. And we've restructured our approach to the market. Our MO is to illuminate and lift and support and encourage the arts and music in Lexington and Central Kentucky. We might stray a little bit out of the market once in a while if something really intriguing comes along, as did recently with an artist in Louisville by the name of Deborah Lott, and one of our writers that we've brought on as a contributor, Emily Goodman from Transylvania, did that story. To restructure, the first thing we did was have coffee meetings with what became a 20-member editorial advisory hive. We didn't want to put together a board or a committee and burden people with board meetings and committee meetings and all that. What we wanted instead was input and advice and feedback from a broad variety of people involved in the spectrum of arts in this city and region. That list is expanding as we go. We also wanted to make it a point, and this is something I'm working very hard on, to recognize that 103 languages are spoken in Fayette County schools now, 200 in Fayette County total. This is according to Global Lex and Isabel Taylor. There are international communities in our city that are going unrecognized for their arts and culture. Unfortunately, we live in times right now when there's a lot of reluctance to call attention to the fact that you are an immigrant in this country, even though we all are in some way.
Or well, some of us more visible than others, or more audible than others.
True, but, you know, I mean, my people come from Ireland and England and Germany, and I have plenty and plenty of friends and relatives who can say the same thing. I have none who can say that they originated here, because I don't think there are any Native Americans in our family tree, but there could well be. I'd be proud of that if there was. By meeting people like Sarita Begley and Lakshmi Sriraman and others, I've come to realize that we're missing an awful lot in this town. It is really an unusually cosmopolitan city for a city of 300,000 to 400,000 people. And yet, there is a very narrow recognition of the kinds of arts and culture that are being produced here. And so we want to apply our approach to all of those communities, and that approach is basically limited to studio visits, to previews and reviews and profiles. And we're also starting a kind of a fly-on-the-wall series. The first effort in that series will be Kevin Nance attending something remarkable that happened here in Lexington last Monday night. I know this will probably be broadcast a little bit later, but so we're talking about mid-September. There was a table read at Lexington Theater Company. They generously provided us with their facilities, or not us, provided the director and screenwriter and book writer their facility for this table read of Southernmost, the Silas House book, which is being made into a film. The director and screenwriter recently relocated to Lexington from Los Angeles, and they brought in the actors who will fill these roles, including Tess Harper, if you are familiar with Tender Mercies, with Robert Duvall, The Trip to Bountiful, the television series Christie. Her resume is as long as my arm. It's pretty incredible. She was here. Jefferson White from Yellowstone is another actor who was involved. A remarkable, I think, 9 or 10-year-old young man from Lexington Theater Company basically stole the show. He was really terrific. Melissa Ray Wilkinson, Karen Czar, and I know I'm going to leave people out here, but there was roughly about 20 actors. And so we attended this, and I asked Kevin Nance to also attend as a reporter-writer, and he's working on the story now. And the idea behind this is that we have a kind of a superficial and one-dimensional understanding of the arts. I think most of us do. Certainly not arts aficionados or theater aficionados, but most of us walk into a theater and we see a production and we see what's happening on the stage. And that's it. But there's equally as much activity and energy and creativity happening behind scenes. And so, and when you know that, when you understand that when that actor that you're seeing has multiple roles and they've got to get off stage and change costumes and come back on stage into another role, somebody out there has got to be waiting with a costume that's been designed to be able to change out of and into quickly in seconds. And that goes on in the costume shop at Lexington Theater Company. And then there's a scene shop at Lexington Theater Company. They're like beehives of activity. So our feeling is that it enhances the performance and really strengthens the audience's understanding of what's going on to know about all that. The same is true. We have a story up right now that Kevin did on Lynn Sweet, the artist, talking with Lynn about the adversity he went through with Guillain-Barré syndrome, where he lost the strength in his hands and the ability to do his craft the way he had done it all his life. He had to switch to a completely different technique, and he did it, and he accomplished it out of resilience and determination. I feel that that kind of reporting and writing deepens and strengthens our understanding of the art itself, and that's one of our motives.
How can one get involved? You know, I saw that there is an opportunity for pitching stories and ideas. What are you looking for?
So what we're looking for are stories that, again, illuminate arts production, music production, and performance in the Lexington, Central Kentucky area. And that, you know, it's kind of a loose term. So it can include Berea, Madison County, perhaps a little bit to the north of us. But it doesn't exclude, you know, occasional story out of Eastern Kentucky or even Western Kentucky, just that our concentration is pretty much on this market. What we want to do is capture something that all of us have detected in Lexington in this past year. There is a level of energy and excitement around the arts generated by several important initiatives that I haven't seen here in a long time. And I feel that we can't lose this opportunity to take advantage of it. Driving that is the growth, sudden growth of the film industry. Kentucky now has the best package of film incentives in the entire country. We have an interview coming up conducted by Tim Kirkman, the director and screenwriter who's doing Southernmost, with Tim Sabo, who's the operations director at Lex Studios. That's the old movie theater over on Codell that was closed and has been converted into 50,000 square feet of sound stages, production studios, green rooms to produce film and television productions. And the first thing that Tim Sabo talks about is the fact that we have those incentives. Coming out of the writer's strike in LA and all the changes that have been brought about by streaming movies, by Netflix, by Prime, and all the various platforms, Hulu, there's been an exodus from Hollywood. It first targeted Austin, and that drove property values through the roof, and many who had not yet relocated began looking elsewhere, including my brother-in-law, Tim Kirkman, and his husband, Drew Barr, who's a renowned theater director nationwide, and he's done productions in Europe as well. They both are here now, but they're just part of a larger group called Lax Lex, which was kind of formed as a loose-knit Facebook group. These are people who've gotten wind of several things. The best tax incentives in the country. They're not even a tax rebate. It's a tax cut. It's a rebate. 30%, up to 30% on your tech crew, for example. At the end of your production, you turn in your costs and you receive a 30% rebate. It's quite an incentive because it's very difficult to produce a movie. That coincided with a recognition that the cost of living in Los Angeles is becoming absolutely untenable.
That must have been news for some people, you know, to suddenly realize that.
Yeah, to discover that you can sell your home in LA for many, many multiples of what you can purchase a home for here in Lexington, combined with the presence of those film incentives, like they're here, and contributing to the community in big ways. It's not like a bunch of LA folks have landed here and there goes the neighborhood. Quite to the contrary. I've seen many hit the ground running, get involved in community organizations. The Lexington Writers Room, for example, there are quite a few who signed up there and are up there just quietly doing their work. And so it's really exciting, and that's creating a lot of buzz and wherever there is film production, there's a catalyst for many art forms. And the same is true with theater and the Lexington Theater Company, which pulls together scene construction, costume design and construction, playwrights. Everybody involved revolves around the production of a Broadway class musical involving local talent, high school, college level, community theater level, regional talent, who are combined with equity actors recruited from Broadway to come in and work with these casts and star in these shows with them. And it's just remarkable. I mean, you know, I lived in New York for about 15 years. I saw quite a bit of Broadway, including 42nd Street twice. The Lexington Theater Company's iteration of 42nd Street was at least as good, if not better. And one of the reasons for that is because the two individuals who run the Lexington Theater Company are Broadway veterans themselves. They know how it works. And so we have that here, and we have all that energy that revolves around that here. And then one other initiative that I'll add is Lex 250, the celebration of our 250th anniversary, is also creating a lot of energy and excitement in the arts community.
What about book reviews?
Well, that's another huge one for us, and I want to talk to you about that.
Okay.
Our first foray into that is something being offered up by Bill Goodman here at Kentucky Humanities, and in partnership with Tom Eblin. They had started some years ago, Where Kentucky Writers Write. It's kind of a literary version of a studio visit. They had gotten a few of those accomplished, and then life intervened, and they've kind of had to put it on hold for a while. So they have offered to contribute what they have to Undermain, with, of course, the understanding that it's credited to that series. The first one we did was on Ed McClanahan, and that one has already run. We have three more in the series that are coming up. We have met with the principals at the Carnegie Center and made it really clear that we're looking for writers. And in particular, we want to expand our writing, our contributing writing stable, if you will, to writers of color, minority writers, international community writers who are going to be much better equipped to understand the nuances and who to talk to and how to talk to whoever they talk to than we are. And that's another thing to point out is that we're combining Undermain and Eastern Standard in some way, in that Art Sheckett, one of my original partners, is now going to be doing interviews, arts interviews, Undermain arts interviews on Eastern Standard as a series. And he's already done his first with Heather Lyons, just to kind of get things going. She's the city's arts and culture director. I'm interviewing Aaron Chandler for both Undermain and Eastern Standard. I talked a lot about the excitement around film and theater, but there's also a ton of excitement around literature. I mean, what town of 400,000 in America can lay claim to having both the state and national poet laureate? And both of them are really dynamic people who are out there sending just the best of messages about our state and our community. There's a lot of excitement and a hive of energy going on in the literary community here, which is, frankly, is storied. I mean, we have some literary lions. A story next week will be on the James Baker Hall Foundation offering their first winners, their first book award winners, which I know that Accents Publishing is very involved in. In fact, we linked to your site.
Great.
And we're really excited about that, and excited in particular about the mission of the James Baker Hall Foundation, which is to mentor and uplift other writers and photographers in Kentucky. So we want to help with that.
Well, listeners of Accents, check out Undermain and check out Eastern Standard.
And if you want to check out Undermain, it's undermainarts.org. And you can check out Eastern Standard online as well at ES for Eastern Standard. So that's ESWEKU.org.
Thank you so much, Tom. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, I enjoyed talking with you, Katerina.